Well, thank you very much for joining us for this week's TechLaw 10 podcast. I'm Jonathan Armstrong. I'm here with Dwayne Morris in London. And Eric, you're with me as well.
Eric Sinrod, Dwayne Morris in San Francisco.
And this week, Eric, you've been looking that on the world of the Internet at least, crime does pay, you say, or at least it doesn't pay for some and does for others.
Well, that's a good point. I guess my real point is that cybercrime continues to cost companies big time. The second annual Cost of Cybercrime study just came out from the Ponemon Institute, and that study makes plain that cyber attacks not only are not going away, but they're still and increasingly financially painful for the victim companies. Indeed, the median annualized cost of cybercrime for a company now is $5.9 million, with a range between $1.5 million and $36.5 million per company. And if this weren't bad enough, this is a 56% increase from the median cost last year in 2010. It's no wonder that cybercrime is coming at a serious price tag for companies because it's occurring on such a frequent basis. According to the study, during just a four-week period, the companies that were within the study suffered 72 successful attacks per week, which is a 45% increase from 2010. So, you know, obviously, you know, efforts to thwart cybercrime, maybe they're helping, but maybe the cyber criminals are ahead of the game. The vast majority of the attacks consisted of malicious code, denial of service, web-based attacks, and stolen devices, which we hear about, of course. You know, what are the costly aspects of this? Well, detention and recovery, the study shows, are the most expensive aspects of internal cybercrime costs. The flip side of that, though, is this suggests that there is a potential for significant cost reduction for companies that are able to implement effective security technology that automates detention and recovery. An interesting aspect of the study was that the average time to resolve a cyber attack is 18 days. So it's not, you know, within 24 hours, if we're talking days. And, of course, time equals money because attacks that are resolved earlier are far less costly. And sometimes it takes quite a long time to resolve an attack. It can take as long as 45 days to contain malicious insider attacks. And that certainly adds to the bottom line. So, you know, companies that can get ahead of the game and, you know, deploy advanced security intelligence and risk management measures certainly can lessen the impact of cybercrime. But this is something major that we're dealing with. What are your thoughts, Jonathan?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. And I've looked at Larry Ponemon's studies in the past, and I've commented on them, and he generally gets it right. And I think he has again. I mean, I guess two things particularly chimed with me. The first is, I think, that you're right, and Larry's right on the survey, that people do take a long time to deal with these issues. I've been present in some very difficult meetings with clients where they've had a cyber attack and we're trying to work out the strategy. And there is an element of panic about at times. I mean, we have an old sitcom, those of you who from the UK will remember Dad's Army, and one of the characters used to create panic by running around the room saying, "Don't panic." And I've seen that in cyber attacks. And the thing that I say to most businesses that I advise in this area is, you've got to work out your plan. You've got to work out the plan early, because these attacks do not work to your timescale. The regulators do not work to your timescale. In most places in Europe, and of course the majority of U.S. states, you have an obligation to inform either the victims or the regulators quite quickly, particularly if credit card details are involved, for example. That doesn't work to your timescale. And of course, the press, the media, TV doesn't work to your timescale. So as soon as it gets out in the wild that your site's down or it's compromised, you will have the media knocking on your door. And the other aspect of this that sort of surprises me perpetually and disappoints me is that the last on your list of four, I think, was stolen devices. that is relatively easy to cure these days. I mean, we've talked before about software like LoJack for laptops. I should say other software is available. But software like that can reduce the risks of a laptop, for example, an iPad getting into the wrong hands, and also minimize the data loss when it does happen. We've had another case today in the UK where a London Ambulance Service, who run the ambulance service obviously throughout the capital, lost patient details from just south, I think, of 3,000 patients, lost their personal details because they'd allowed a contractor to upload those details onto a laptop and the laptop was stolen. This happens almost every single day, and I bet that the regulator is as tired of taking regulatory action against people as almost I feel tired about talking about it. It seems to me this is something that we can fix relatively easily, relatively painlessly. And why don't we? Malicious code. You can use software applications to check the code to work out whether that's there. Most of the incidents I see are down to subcontractor error. It's not necessarily the people in the organization that have done something bad, but quite often it's subcontractors who aren't properly supervised. And the number of times when I'm acting for a corporation and we've said to a subcontractor, we're going to hold you to account for your data security standards and we're going to put something meaningful in the contract to hold you to account, I would say 70% of the time the vendor says nobody has asked us for that before. Why? You know, in Europe, it's a legal obligation that we pass on what we feel, how strongly we feel about security to our vendors. Why aren't people doing that in the contract? That in itself is likely to be a breach of data protection law across Europe. So that significantly will add not only to those big dollar numbers that you've talked about, but will also potentially land them as a minimum, having to make solemn promises to the regulator that they'll mend their ways publicly, public solemn promises. And I just share your frustration, Eric, as you probably guessed.
Well, and speaking of big dollars, and of course the study deals primarily with, you know, internal costs and internal losses suffered as a result of cybercrime. But let me add another wrinkle to it. You know, what happens when companies potentially become liable to others based on criminal acts of yet others? As an example, let's say there's some disgruntled person who wants to wreak havoc and they launch a distributed denial of service attack on company B, you know, propelling the attack through the website of company A is what we call the zombie site. And yeah. You know, company B then is shut down and brought down because of the distributed denial of service attack. Company B suffers real financial harm, might not be able to go against the original attacker because that attacker might be difficult to find or might not really have financial means to pay off any real damages. But company B might argue that company A, the zombie site, even though not intending to cause any damage and was actually used by the criminal, if you will, and I'm simplifying this a lot, but company B argues, company A, you were negligent. You didn't put in enough security systems and protections, not only to protect yourself, but potentially third parties, and you're now responsible to us. I haven't seen many cases like this yet, but it's a possibility as these types of attacks and crime become known. And then you have the traditional negligence arguments, you know, was there causation and was it foreseeable and is there a duty? And we'll see. But, you know, you're making, you know, obvious and correct points that, you know, companies need to be smart and implement whatever protection measures they can, not only to protect themselves, but potentially even others. What do you think of that?
I agree. I mean, I have such a case at the moment, and for obvious reasons, I wouldn't go into the detail. If it doesn't settle, then I will. But I'm acting for Company A, and basically they've been done harm by Company B. Company B is controlled by a well-known celebrity over here, and I think where, you know, we think that the celebrity involved probably didn't even know that Company B was doing the bad things. And I think that, you know, in many of these situations, just because you've found one victim doesn't mean to say there aren't any more. And websites are being used almost like human shields to protect the real villains who are doing these things. You know, we shouldn't be surprised that some of the villains out there are very, very clever people and know their way around the internet.
Oh,
and are also, I've seen blackmail as well. I've seen where corporations are too, they cannot say with certainty that their systems are good enough to resist an attack. And when somebody asks them for money, I know that some people are paying up. And you've got to have the right procedures in place to make sure that you can resist those threats as well. So I agree, Eric. I think that's probably almost all we've got time for today. But I think I think you're right to be concerned about it, and I'm sure these are subjects that we'll return to before long.
If I could say one last thing, I once had the interesting experience of speaking at DEF CON, which is an annual conference in Las Vegas in the summer. And not only is it hot, but it's fascinating because you have the black hats there and the white hats. The black hats are people that are potentially currently involved in hacking and cracking and other activities, and the white hats are people that are now employed to try to prevent that, and a lot of them are former black hats, and you sort of see the push and the pull, and there's no question that the forces in place that are seeking to disrupt and potentially cause mischief and computer crime are active and intelligent, and obviously, according to Larry Poneyman's study, having some real impact. So that being said, thank you for joining. We would normally call this Tech Law 10. Maybe this has been Tech Law 13 this week. We went over a couple minutes. Hope you don't mind. This is Eric Sinrod at San Francisco. You can reach me at ejsinrod@duanemorris.com. We're both available on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter. Jonathan, if you want to do the final.
Yeah, I'm JP Armstrong at DuaneMorris.com, and do check into our LinkedIn discussion group where you can continue this discussion, and we'll post some of the stats that Eric has talked about today, just in case you didn't have time to scribble them down and want to. Thank you for listening. We'll speak to you again next week. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.